the continuation on the inside path comes from seeing the dissolving of everything. Now, I mentioned yesterday already that that was a very important point in the inside, on the inside path, that having experienced arising and ceasing of whatever there is in oneself to the point of seeing it momentarily, now, this moment, that brings about the experience of just watching how everything is dissolving. Now, this momentary experience of arising and ceasing means that we can actually feel ourselves to be that way. And when we feel ourselves to be constantly in movement, one of the things that happen is one doesn't take oneself so seriously anymore. It isn't all that important. It's all just going by anyway. This all-fired importance that we have about ourselves is such a strong difficulty, such an enormous difficulty, because we can't see beyond it. If that's all there is, that we are so important, then how about everything else? Doesn't seem so important then, does it? It's, everything is always reckoned in terms of how does it affect me? So me is always the center of attention. And not this person, but me. The idea of me is a center of attention. The more that goes like that, the more difficult life becomes. So the arising and ceasing is not just only the way to Nibbana, which of course it is, but it is also a very important aspect of getting things into a proper perspective. The proper perspective about life, the world, oneself and others is a balance. That we're balancing looking after ourselves, certainly, we have to. But what about everything else? Is that just peripheral, seen with peripheral vision, or is it really in focus? Arising and ceasing is the one thing that will put it into focus. Without that, real understanding of that, which then becomes the experience, the inside path won't go any further. So as we see that in everything, in thought, in feeling, in sense contact, in body, in everything around us, and see it moment to moment, our mind will automatically go towards the dissolution, how everything falls away, keeps moving away from us. And now that is the dissolution can give rise to a feeling of terror or panic. We mentioned that already yesterday, and it can be considered to be a separate step on the inside, or it can be part of the next step, which is disenchantment. It depends which way one wants to look at it. A jhana meditator is not likely to have much or any terror or panic. because the mind is cushioned against that. The jhanas are not just a pleasant abiding. They change the mind. And that's what we're after, isn't it? Because the mind we had until now wasn't really bringing happiness, was it? So changing one's mind is the easiest way to do that, is through the jhanas. So also this particular point in the inside path, the terror or the panic which arises, is not likely to be of any real consequence for a jhana meditator. For a non-jhana meditator that gets to the dissolution, it is a point which needs to be considered. There is another point in that also, that somebody who hasn't got the concentration for jhanas is not that likely to come to as far as this, because you need concentration for all this. So to see that everything is momentarily, from moment to moment, falling apart is usually done with a very concentrated mind. Now there's always exceptions. These are generalities. But the terror, the panic which arises even for a jhana meditator is the fact that at this point it's possible to have an experience of whatever, what have I been doing all my life? I've tackled it all wrong. This looks entirely different from what I thought it was. And that's not so much terror and panic, it's more a bit of a disappointment or a feeling of, for heaven's sakes, why didn't I know this 20 years ago or 15 years ago or 30 years ago, whatever one's age happens to be. So it can be more like that. But if one comes to that stage of where one really sees all this dissolving in from moment to moment and doesn't do any jhanas and still has enough concentration to experience this, not think it. Thinking it is one thing, but experiencing is another. And the experience actually is quite remarkable, because the whole compactness of this body, the whole solidity of mind and body has no reality at that time. It feels as if there are just constant impulses. No, not even that. It feels as if there is some movement, yes, constant movement, but this movement is not even felt as if it ever comes together to be a whole body and whole mind, because it's so quick. So this is a very important step. Now, the person who doesn't have the jhanas and actually becomes aware of this may become frightened. It's quite in the cards, because the mind doesn't have any recourse to anything. Although the mind has slowly worked up to that understanding, it doesn't have anything that it can now rely on. It sees everything that it has always relied on falling apart. It has been relying on its own intelligence. It has been relying on this body to look after this person, because it can, you know, do things. It has been relying on its knowledge, on its charm, on its beauty, on its wealth, on its, who knows what we're all relying on its job, on its family, everything, whatever we've been relying on, particularly on oneself, of course. And we see this self, this so-called self, being nothing but a movement. At that time, it's seen as a movement. So that's a bit of a panic can be arising there, because what am I going to rely on? And at that time, it's, if that does arise, it's if the mind can see this clearly, the mind will know that what it actually means is that there's nothing that's desirable to be found anywhere, because everything is falling apart. And at that moment, the mind can be content with that insight. See, the first step of fear arising is a discontent. This is not the way I want it. This isn't the way I had figured it out. I had figured it out entirely different. In fact, most people figure out, if everybody's going to be nice to me, I'll be fine. That's what most people think. I mean, it's very primitive, but that's what most people think. And since nobody ever gets it that way, we're never fine. But at that moment, it's a totally different view. We see that nothing can be relied upon. It's all falling to bits. And that moment, the reality of dukkha is seen. Because I have said this before, but I must say this again, dukkha does not mean pain, grief, and lamentation, suffering, tragedy, birth, decay, and death. It means all that. But it means unsatisfactoriness. That's the meaning of dukkha. And that's what one sees quite clearly at that moment. It's all falling apart, so how can it be satisfactory? And at that time, the mind is also ready to see the danger in looking for satisfaction in the worldly conditions. Now, we do get certain satisfactions. I mean, people sometimes do tell us that we're very clever and very nice and very pretty and all the rest of it. And sometimes we actually do have success with one thing or another. But it's usually short-lived. And so when the other times, there's always dissatisfaction. Now, dissatisfaction does not mean that there is a certain external cause for dissatisfaction. It's nobody's fault. There's nobody in this world that has promised to satisfy us, whether human or otherwise. There is nobody at all. Dissatisfaction is a human condition. And dissatisfaction, to see it on a spiritual level, means we've gained insight. But if we're dissatisfied, we've seen it on a worldly level, and it doesn't do a slightest bit of good. Because being dissatisfied is very simple. Every kid can do it. From the day they're born until they're out of the house, you hear nothing but dissatisfaction. They're screaming and crying. And I mean, anybody can do it at any age, to be dissatisfied. And of course, we can do it too. We can be dissatisfied with anything, with the other people, with the weather, with the food, with the meditation, with the teacher, with the Buddha, with anything. It doesn't matter what it is, we can dream up anything. Our minds are so fertile, we can dream up anything. So that doesn't help us to be dissatisfied. But to see that dissatisfaction is one of the three characteristics of the whole of human existence, and unsatisfactoriness, one of the three characteristics of the whole universe, that's insight. So there's an enormous difference between reacting to those things and then having all this sort of unhappiness within, or seeing it. One is just reaction, the worldly way, and the other is insight. And when we gain the insight in the unsatisfactoriness of all conditions, we've got, at this point, we have a very deep understanding. Because that will not take us away from the path, but bring it us right on it. Because the next thing that we will see is the danger that exists in all formations. The danger which exists in everything that we can put our mind on. The danger that exists is because it always pushes us somewhere, either to wanting to have it or wanting to get rid of it, no matter whether it is something gross and material or whether it's something subtle and spiritual. We want to get it or we want to get rid of it. We want to get jhanas, we want to get enlightenment, we want to get rid of defilements, whatever it is, it's oppressive. It's like having somebody with a whip standing behind one and constantly hitting one. And we're doing it ourselves. We are the one with the whip and we're also the one with being hit. So when we see that, then the urgency arises. The urgency that we want to get out. Now with that, we have probably a feeling within that our pathway is actually, we are actually moving along. The urgency brings us to that feeling of moving along the spiritual path. We don't get bogged down on it. Here's one paragraph which is useful to read out. It's when we receive the danger, when we have seen danger and dissolution. Whenever a meditator finds that the knowledge of this dissolution, that's all, everything falling apart, has arisen within him, should make it a point to stick to his meditation seat, even if it means foregoing meals and refreshments, should continue to sit motionless, allowing the cycle of insight knowledges to turn full circle. Those of keen insight pass through these stages very rapidly. So one shouldn't eat, huh? Well, what it means is that the urgency should be felt, that one should feel the urgency. Now I'm seeing. And you see this seeing, it's very interesting also. What can I compare it to? You know these things that children play with where there is a picture that is drawn in a picture book and then there is a face of a cow hidden in the branch. And if you look at it from a certain angle, you can see the cow quite clearly. And then you put your head up like this and the cow has disappeared. And then you look again and there's the cow. This is the way it happens when real insight arises. First it is, yeah, right, I see that. And then you look back again and say everything looks the same as before. And then you look at that insight again and everything has changed. And eventually you get used to that change. And that's the only thing you see. It's all falling apart. Nothing is satisfying. But you'd never become dissatisfied. On the contrary, you become very happy about it because you realize you've seen the truth. Everybody is intelligent enough to know when they've seen the truth. Having seen the truth of dissatisfaction everywhere you go is a feeling of happiness. When you're feeling dissatisfied, then one hasn't seen it. When one still thinks that one has a special deal. It's me, special. Or somebody did something specially bad, so that's why I'm now feeling so bad. Now these two, terror, the danger, and the urgency, actually those three together, they all bring with it the real next stage of insight, which is disenchantment, nibbida. And with disenchantment, the super mundane past starts. We haven't really experienced the super mundane yet, but we don't go back. Having seen that, we are firmly on it. The the danger brings with it, from the disillusion, the impermanence, and with the dissatisfaction, the dukkha. And having seen all that, the disenchantment with whatever is possible to do in the world, whatever it may be. It means that we can see quite clearly that even the most pleasant state is not going to satisfy us fully. We may have, well, let's say, all eight jhanas, and yet the mind which is finely tuned to the experiences knows there's got to be something else. This can't be all. They too are impermanent. Now obviously we can't walk around or live our lives in the eight jhanas. We've got to live our lives in a very ordinary consciousness. And what we try to do in our daily lives is to relieve the tedium of this ordinary consciousness with pleasant sense contacts. And as long as we believe that these pleasant sense contacts are going to do it for us, and as long as we're reacting to them, we don't have any disenchantment. But when we see that what we're doing, when we're watching ourselves and recognizing the fact that although we have the pleasant sense contact, it has no satisfaction in it at all. And this is the interesting part of it, because until then, we always thought that the pleasant sense contact, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling and thinking which of that which is pleasant and having that, gave us happiness. And now, all we see is the sense contact and a pleasant feeling arising which no longer satisfies. And that's the disenchantment. So even eating one's favorite food or seeing one's favorite movie or hearing one's favorite music, pleasant feeling arises, but it doesn't satisfy. There's no satisfaction at all. The mind has become finely tuned to all that is happening within, because by that time as far as we got here, the mind has been mindful enough, long enough, investigating enough, long enough, so that it knows exactly what's happening within. And it can tell quite clearly that pleasant feeling, coming and going, no satisfaction. And because of this no satisfaction with their pleasant feelings, the search for the pleasant contacts stops. There's no search for it at all. One doesn't search for them at all. They do arise and disappear, as they've always done, and one knows exactly that they have arisen and have disappeared again. The search has stopped. And with that stopping of the search for the pleasant sense contacts, the world no longer seems the place where we're going to find our happiness. We have seen through it that the world is nothing but a phenomena which we use for our livelihood, because we have a body, so we have to use the world to live in it, but we no longer use it as our playground. It's not necessary any longer. It's there, we keep the body in it alive, but we have given up the idea that it is a playground which will provide happiness for us. Which means that equanimity can arise. We don't have to react. Neither do we have to react with great glee about anything that seems good to us, nor do we have to react with depression to anything that seems bad to us. The world hasn't got it. It cannot satisfy. Now, we don't need to do that on an intellectual basis. We can, of course. It's quite helpful if one does it on an intellectual basis in order to get a grip on the whole thing. But meaningful, it is only when we feel it. And therefore, the whole pathway is, of course, one of feeling. But since, in order to give the guidelines, one has to use the words, it appears as if it were a path of intellectual deliberation. It's nothing like that at all. But it's the only way I can communicate on that level. I cannot give you the feeling. That you're going to have to arouse yourself. The intellectual deliberation is nothing but a signpost pointing in the right direction. And if you want to get out of dukkha, that's the direction you can take, if you like. And as you take that direction and examine through your own experience all these factors, the feeling will arise. And the feeling of disenchantment with the world is one of great impact, enormous peacefulness. One doesn't have to achieve anything. One doesn't have to comply with anything. Of course, one behaves as society expects, but there's nothing there. I don't know if you can remember when you were teenagers. I can remember that, a long time ago. That it seemed to be a shame if you didn't have a date on Saturday. Right? And preferably Saturday and Sunday. Date on both days. I mean, it was a real oppression. You had to have it. The same now. You have to have it. You have to have certain things in this world. It doesn't have to be dates, but it's got to be something. Whatever it is, so that you can hold up your head and say, yes, I've got all this, and I'm doing all this, and I can do all this. When the world is no longer considered to be your playground, and you no longer think that the world's got it, all that oppression goes. Everything is just moving along, that's all. Constantly changing. Coming and going. That's all it's doing. A constant movement. Now, if one doesn't see that constant movement, one cannot come to that equanimity. One has to see the constant movement. And isn't it simple to see? Everything we are moves. The breath moves. The heart moves. The thought moves. The legs move. A feeling comes, a feeling goes. The day comes, the day goes. The night comes, the night goes. Isn't it simple? Everything comes, everything goes. And the more we put it pinpointedly on one moment, the more it disappears. It's all falling apart. Every breath goes. If one doesn't see that, then the disenchantment cannot arise, because we still hope that, we still are full of hope that it's, we're going to make it out there. There's nothing to make out there. It hasn't got anything to make it with. It's all coming and going. And that kind of pressure that we put on ourselves, nobody does it, we only put it on ourselves, that we have to be a certain way, and we have to understand a certain way, and we have to live a certain way, and we have to relate a certain way, and we have to connect a certain way. It's all pressure. We're putting it all on ourselves. What certain way? It's all coming and going, constantly. The movement which is in the whole of the universe, it can be felt in one's own mind and body. So when we do these different methods which I've talked about and do these inquiries, we eventually will feel it. And only when we feel it will we not feel what we used to feel. And that's what it's all about. We get away from that what we used to feel, and we feel something new. And as we feel something new, the world's not disgusting. It just is. The world's not wonderful, it just is. In constant movement, that's all. And we are not wonderful, and we are not awful, we just are. In constant movement, always changing. And the whole thing has the connotation of transparency. That's another thing that we become aware of when we see the dissolution. It's not that we can look through somebody and see the ribs or anything like that, but we feel as if there was a certain transparency about it all, that this whole business of being such a solid entity has completely gone, so that even out there, it's all moving. It's not solid. It's growing and decaying. When one has come to this disenchantment, sometimes people become disenchanted also with their meditation practice. That's also an interesting stage, because the mind might say, well, if there's nothing worthwhile, so what am I doing this for? Naturally, the mind will eventually know that in order to get out of the dissatisfaction of the world, one has to continue with one's practice. But there can be that moment or moments, several moments, where the mind says, well, if nothing is worth anything, so why should I do this? If nothing is worth anything. Which is, of course, an unbalanced state, because it's extreme. It's extreme in denying the value of the spiritual path. Whereas usually we are on the other side. We are extreme on affirming the beauty and worth and value of the material world. So we need to find the middle way. The world is, and we need it because we've got a body, and it's got to live in it, that body. But it's never going to be totally satisfying. It's got its moments, but it's never going to be totally satisfying. And the spiritual path, this practice, will bring us to that moment of seeing absolute truth. And seeing absolute truth for ourselves, we can eventually be completely satisfied. But then, of course, the me isn't satisfied. It's just satisfaction. also at this stage, sometimes people not only feel dissatisfied with the practice or disenchanted with the practice, but with all their companions, with everything that is going on. And being in that state of mind, the practice, of course, gets stopped. So it's very important to not only be able to re-arouse wisdom, faith, energy, mindfulness, and concentration, the five spiritual faculties, but also to have that kind of understanding that enlightenment is still quite a ways off, so there's more practice necessary. So disenchantment can have very strong impact, positively and negatively. So we need to see it in the middle. What arises together with, or as a result of, I should say, as a result of this disenchantment, if it is seen properly, that the world's got nothing to offer, is a strong desire to be delivered of the world. It's called desire for deliverance. And that is the next insight. From the disenchantment, it goes to the desire for deliverance. The mind says, this is all I want to do. I want to get out because I can never find completeness, fulfillment. I can never find an absence of dukkha. And again, dukkha doesn't mean suffering. It means unsatisfactoriness. There's always something. If it isn't this, then there's something else. If it isn't something that we can change ourselves, then we hope that somebody else will change it, and then after it's been changed, it's also no good, and then we have to change it again. There's always something. We can never be in one spot, totally satisfied, without any changes, having complete fulfillment within, without it dissolving. So then we know deliverance is possible, or freedom, because the Buddha said there's only one thing I teach, and that's dukkha and its end to reach. That's all he taught. It wasn't just a meditation path, wasn't just an insight path, it was a path to get out of all dukkha. There's only one thing I teach, and that's dukkha and its end to reach. Because of his compassion, when he reached the end of dukkha, he saw that some people could be helped to reach the end of dukkha too. But in order to want to reach the end of dukkha, we've got to see it properly, huh? That's why the inquiry into anicca, dukkha, anatta, whichever one we like, has to be done with great skill and energy so that we actually can see it in a moment-to-moment arising and ceasing, that there is this dissolving of everything, which means unsatisfactoriness. So if we want to reach dukkha, we have to know it. Desire for deliverance has some peculiarities in it on a practical standpoint. Very often, when that has come about, one constantly sees one's own shortcomings, and there's a lack of self-confidence. Now, that is not so strong in a jhana meditator, because the second jhana brings self-confidence. But it's still is there, that because one hasn't really come to the end of anything, there is a lack of confidence, there's a reflection upon one's own shortcomings, and there's also great restlessness because of the fact that one really wants to get out. The mind sometimes becomes very restless and it can't settle down to any of the meditative methods. It just can't make up its mind at all what to do. It tries one thing and it tries another, and it's very restless. At that time, also one wants to change things, one wants to change the room around, one wants to change the kitchen around, one wants to change one's sitting posture, one wants to change one's the meditation method, one wants to change one's companions, one wants to change one's teacher, one wants to change everything around, because everything is so unsatisfactory. But that has to be seen quite clearly as just a state which also dissolves, constantly dissolving. Only a mind which is an objective observer of itself will be able to continue on this path. We have to observe what we're doing. If we don't observe it, then we will believe it. And if we believe it, we get stuck. Because if we believe all these negativities or these hindrances, obstacles and defilements, well, we'll get stuck in them, won't we? There's nothing there that is believable. Everything arises and ceases constantly. Now, even if the mind resurrects all its miseries over and over again, that doesn't mean they haven't arisen and ceased in the meanwhile. They have. They're constantly coming and going. The mind just brings it all up again. Over and over. One misery after another, or the same one. Over and over. But that doesn't mean it's not dissolving. Everything is dissolving. Only when we have seen that is it a possibility of sitting with it and saying, that too is impermanent. Whatever it may be, it's all falling apart constantly. But it has to be seen moment to moment, in each moment, how it falls apart in each moment. Not over a long span, like the universe falling apart, or maybe like oneself dying, or maybe like the whole day disappearing. That's not good enough. It's got to be seen in every moment, how everything comes together and falls apart. And that's such a relief, because who wants to hang on to all the miseries, to all the dukkha? People want to hang on. One wonders why. And if one looks at it with a little bit of humor and a little bit of objectivity, one can start really smiling about oneself. And that means that one has become a little bit more objective. If we can see our own absurdities with a smile, then we have seen ourselves a little more correctly. We also need determination. There are 10 virtues which we need to develop, and which anyone who wants to be delivered of dukkha needs to develop on this path in order to have the necessary strength of character to carry on. This path is not for people with weak willpower, or with a weak character. This is only for strong-minded people. One of them is determination. Determination is the same as willpower. If we don't have that determination to get ourselves out of this unsatisfactory state that every deluded person is in, and which we must have seen by that time, that that is not satisfactory, if that determination isn't there, we can easily fall into the error of being depressed by it all. Well, being depressed by it all is the same kind of error on the other side of the extreme as being delighted by it all. It's such a wonderful world. Everything's all right with the best of all worlds. Is it really? 86 wars since 1945. Everything is all right with the best of all worlds. Nonsense, huh? Well, the opposite is equal nonsense. That one can, that there's any reason to be depressed by it. Because all of it is just a passing show. Constantly moving. Always changing. Never having any absolute truth in it. Never any absolute reality. Nothing. Just